Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, December 11th, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
So, Kevin, the beauty industry has exploded over the past few years. It's worth an estimated $450 billion worldwide, and it's powered by social media, K-beauty, clean products, and now children. A lot of kids are really into skincare. We're talking about injectables, facelifts, cosmetic procedures. People are getting younger and younger seeking these services and products. And so today, we're going to talk about what's happening to us, who profits, and what the trends are. We have Jessica DeFino, the beauty critic behind Ask Ugly. It's a column with The Guardian, and she's also behind Flesh World. And we'll be talking about all the trends in beauty. Men are into it now. More and more products geared towards men. So, Kevin, I don't know if you're on that, no. But it's out there. And so we'd love to hear from you. This, hopefully you'll call in. The questions of the day are you feeling a heightened sense of pressure to change how you look? Add steps to your beauty routine. Do more. Spend more to look younger, look better, look different. And how do you think all of this is impacting kids? You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, leave your comments in the chat. And I know so many young people who spend their time going to Sephora, you know, spending all their babysitting money, money from their little jobs on skincare, expensive skincare.
Well, here's the thing I'll say, too, that broke my little heart. I have a 6-year-old, and on her Christmas list this year, it just said makeup. And I was like, where's she getting that from?
Yeah, six.
What do I say to that, right?
Yeah, you got to have to get her some little lip gloss or something.
Yeah, but I can say, Cherry, you always look good. So whatever you're doing,
I know. It takes steps, okay? We'll talk about it. But not too much. I'm not as crazy as some of the folks, but you'll be surprised. It's going to be interesting. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. And we have our trio of news stories. Kevin, you're going to kick us off today.
Yeah, 19% property tax coming to Delco for homeowners. The All-Democratic board voted 4-1 last night to approve a 19% tax increase. And this comes after a 23% increase last year.
Ugh.
So county council says this is going to put them on sound financial footing, with the, quote, first truly balanced budget in a decade.
Wow.
They argue this is necessary to cover the costs of employee pay and benefits, which are going up, and increases to the county contribution to SEPTA. Obviously, SEPTA has been in the news, and the finances around SEPTA, dominated headlines. Residents have been vocal in their opposition leading up to this vote. There were senior citizens testifying, look, I want a fixed income. And, you know, even if the increase is, you know, a couple hundred bucks for me, that matters. And then, of course, you had some people saying, we have all these expenditures that as a county we've taken on that maybe we should be questioning. And there were things like deprivatizing the county jail. There were things like launching a health department. Delco was one of the only counties in the region without a health department. Now they have one.
And so that costs money.
That costs money. So there's been kind of push and pull on that, Cherry. And obviously there's political implications here, too.
Because affordability is the buzzword, right? The county claims their budget only went up 6%, but they inherited a deficit when the folks took power 5 years ago, and they've been trying to correct that. But I did the numbers, Kevin, and the tax increase will translate to an additional $188 every year for the average home value of $255,000. That's $15 a month. It really doesn't sound like a lot, but when you add that to increased electric bill prices, water bill prices, groceries, SEPTA fares went up, right? Services are costing more, and it makes the average person feel squeezed because your salary isn't necessarily increasing to add. So you have less money to spend. And so, you know, you hope that this will be the last big hike for Delco, but we'll see.
And, you know, you get your mortgage bill and all of a sudden, you know, you think it's going to be one thing. You're used to what that payment is
not.
And then it goes up. And we're talking about affordability across the board, like you're saying. And this cuts both ways, right? It's affordability for individuals and it's affordability for government because they look at it and say, our prices for XYZ are going up and where
and
are we
everybody
going to
wants
turn?
More money, but
they
then that adds to the budget. So
and then the politics of, you know, basically Democrats being in charge since 2019, the Republicans ruled Demco for so long. Will there be some sort of backlash to this? There's not going to be another election until 2027. So we'll have to see what happens.
See what happens. Second story, the Pennsylvania Attorney General is fining Dollar General $1.5 million for overcharging customers. And I'll say allegedly because there was an investigation that had been pending. The AG's office, they launched this investigation. It uncovered numerous instances when customers were charged higher prices at checkout. And Dollar General has about 900 retail locations throughout the Commonwealth. And according to the Attorney General, the stores failed more than 40% of pricing accuracy checks over the span of multiple years. And The Guardian did a deep dive on the dollar store industry a few days ago. They reported that overcharging of cash-strapped customers is a rampant problem. Dollar stores, they offer these low prices for household items. And so you'll see something for $5, for example, for frozen pizzas on the shelf. But then you get to the checkout, they charge you like $7.50. And most people, Kevin, they don't even notice that they're being charged more. And what they found is that the problem is, look, when the prices are updated, it changes at the register automatically. But then a staff member has to go around the shelves and change the prices on the shelves. And a lot of times they don't get around to doing that.
Because what seems to be kind of built into the business model here is very few staff working at the Dollar General being paid pretty low wages. And so there's this burden to change prices often that just isn't practically happening. So that's interesting. And then just the, kind of the wider context here, I was looking at some older reporting in the New York Times that basically was talking about the how fast dollar stores were growing through the pandemic.
Yeah.
And this kind of bipartisan consensus in some degrees to push back against that, saying that these stores are not so great for the communities. And then, of course, the dollar stores like Dollar General, Dollar Tree saying, if we're not here, what are the other options?
Yeah. And I think about it because I'm a dollar store shopper. Right. And now it's the holiday season. A lot of people go to the dollar store for wrapping paper and all of that. So you really need to check when you go to the register, you make sure you check your receipts and you can ask them to honor the price when you're at the register, because most stores will not give you a refund later on. If you realize, oh, I paid $3 extra, they will not give you that refund. So.
All right. Story number three.
Yes.
It's talking about affordability, talking about beauty. Well,
yes.
GLP-1s won't be covered for Pennsylvania Medicaid recipients. So these are the weight loss drugs that have been growing in popularity. And as that's been happening, they've been increasing in price. And there's this growing scrutiny over who should pay for what, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these were originally designed for people with diabetes. And Pennsylvania says, okay, we'll still pay for that if you have that diagnosis from our Medicaid budget. But if you're just looking for treatment for weight loss or obesity, the state's not going to pay that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that's going to save them hundreds of millions of dollars. So this stat from Spotlight Reporting and friend of the show, Stephen Caruso, jumped out at me. 2022, the GLP-1 expenses in Pennsylvania, $223 million.
Yeah.
2024, $650 million, expected to double this year.
And
so a rapid increase in expense.
And you know what? I'm not mad at the state. 70,000 people on Medicaid have been prescribed Ozempic for weight loss. And at some point, you got to get a handle on this. I mean, Pennsylvania's budget has a structural deficit. That rainy day fund is going to run out, and we cannot keep having the budget sort of balloon out. And so I guess the governor said, you know, we got to deal with this. But what stood out to me, Kevin, is that it was done quietly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this was done a while ago, but this was quiet. It happened last month.
Right.
Nobody really knew. And now it's sort of trickling out. And think about it. The healthcare bills are going to start getting higher next month unless Congress comes up with something. So all of this is hitting at once.
Right. So we had this big Pennsylvania stalemate budget situation for months and months. And this seems like it was one of the things behind the scenes that helped get a deal done. Republicans had been pushing for it. Shapiro agreed to it. You do have some Democrats saying, hey, look, in the long run, Giving people these drugs for weight loss, for obesity, is going to be a...
Keep the cost down
for things like heart disease and all the related, ill effects of obesity from a health point of view. So interesting conversation there. And it's not only happening just at the governmental level. I mean, this is happening across the country in private insurance as well, because, you know, employer-backed plans are seeing their prices go up. And then employers have to say, are we going to eat the full cost of these new expenses, or are we going to pass them on to our employees?
And they're like $1,000.
And so then all of a sudden your personal premium goes up, and you know, may not be because you're directly on one of these, but somebody in your office is or whatever. So it's just a really interesting conversation about how, I guess, finances evolve.
They do.
When new technology comes around.
And by the way, we had the mayor on yesterday talking about her home plan. There was a voice vote by city council yesterday, and it looks like the city council version is going to pass, and that the first year budget for that home plan will be focused on those with the lowest income.
So Mayor Parker was here yesterday, and kind of her last ditch argument for her side of it, and just a few hours later, didn't happen.
Yes. And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg. Last month, actress Shay Mitchell sparked outrage online when she launched a line of skincare products aimed at kids ages 3 and up. But this is not the only oddity in the beauty industry. In 2025, TikTok overflowed with tutorials for pale face makeup, reviews of face shaping straps, and jaw maxing tips. Take a look and listen.
Non-toxic skincare routine without any endocrine disruptors or carcinogens. Our skin is our largest organ, so it really is so important to pay attention to what we're putting on it.
As a pale girlie myself, I'm so glad that the pale girl makeup look is having its moment, and I am embracing the untanned skin.
Your jaw is getting snatched as you're wearing this.
So today is the day that I am going in for surgery. I can't believe I'm actually saying that.
That is what I want my lashes to look like.
Seriously, look at this before and after. Wow.
You can actually grow your jaw. Here's how. Chewing super duper tough gum. Boom. Instant jaw pump. And I actually found this on the TikTok shop, so you can get it too. Just click the button and get it while it's still in sale.
And all of this is contributing to the steady growth of the global beauty industry, now valued at $450 billion. And today, we want to know, how are the latest trends impacting society at large? And to unpack all of this with us, we have a guest who has been described as the woman the beauty industry fears and who the Huffington Post credited for yanking consumers out of the matrix made by the beauty industry. Jessica DeFino is author of Ask Ugly, a beauty advice column for The Guardian, and the writer behind the newsletter Flesh World. Welcome to Studio 2, Jessica.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Terry.
And so we want to hear from you, our listeners, as well. Are you feeling a heightened sense of pressure when it comes to beauty and grooming? That is, to change how you look, add steps to your beauty routine, to do more, to spend more, to look younger, better, or different. And we want to hear how you think all of this is impacting kids. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. And so, Jessica, I mean, we're living through this big beauty boom. And so $450 billion sounds like a lot of money. Can you just try to give us an understanding of what has happened to make people spend so much more money? And I will say that my beauty, you know, routine went from like 2 steps back in the day to like 5, sometimes 7 steps.
Yeah, I think we're seeing this all over the place across all sorts of demographics. I think there's a lot happening here. I think first, as society becomes more virtual, it becomes more visual, and there's more importance placed on aesthetics, and people are faced with themselves on Zoom, on the front-facing camera, on social media, and critiquing themselves a lot more. I think post-pandemic, we really saw the beauty industry grow exponentially.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that had to do with just feeling out of control. And when you feel out of control, one thing you can control is your body, or one thing we like to think we can control is our body. And there was also a huge shift from the way we talked about beauty during the pandemic. It became self-care. And what's wrong with self-care? Everyone wants to take care of themselves. And so I think that really contributed to the growth of skincare specifically.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the beauty industry. Like, what are we talking about here? You mentioned skincare, mm-hmm. but there's also procedures, grooming. Like, tell me what is included in that $450 billion bubble.
Right. So much. So there's skincare, there's makeup, there's cosmetic surgery, there are non-invasive procedures like Botox and filler, lasers, you know, all sorts of treatments like that. There's now mm-hmm. a salmon sperm facial that you can
salmon
get.
Sperm?
Salmon sperm.
Oh my goodness.
Facial you can get. We're also talking about nails. We're talking about hair. Men's grooming, deodorants, perfumes, all of that is included in that figure.
Yeah, and we're doing so much. I know you write a column called Ask Ugly, mm-hmm. and your people, I noticed people talking to you about their feet. They're talking to you about all sorts of things. And so what are you seeing sort of popping up that people are talking about that maybe you didn't think people were talking about just a few years ago?
So much. I mean, like you mentioned, people are insecure about almost every part of their physical being, from feet to eyebrows to hair thinning and hair loss. Skin is a huge focus. And then I think a lot of people are feeling sort of conflicted about the normalization of cosmetic surgery and feeling intrigued by it, but also, wait, why do I suddenly want this?
Yeah. And it feels like there's more pressure to sort of not age, I don't know, look better, have flawless skin. And so I wanted to sort of start with skincare because that's a huge industry. And I know a lot of the young people, especially teenagers, they're so big into skincare. Mm-hmm. And what have you seen the trends sort of look like? Because I mentioned earlier that the steps used to be like wash your face, maybe a toner and a moisturizer. Now there's like multiple steps.
There are so many steps. There's no end to the steps that the industry is creating for us. I think the shift from skincare to self-care is a big part of this. I also think skincare has more of a health and wellness vibe than cosmetic vibe. So I think people feel a little bit better about indulging in that rather than wearing a full face of makeup. This mm-hmm. doesn't feel vain. It feels like I'm taking care of my body. I'm taking care of my skin. And this shift in perception has opened up a lot of room for the skincare industry to really latch onto that language and sell us things we don't really need under the guise of, you're going to feel great. You're going to feel confident. This is wellness.
And there's like serums and all sorts of things. And the glass skin mm-hmm. with the Korean skincare has exploded. Yes. And everybody's putting snail mucin and all sorts of things. What do you think it is that has made this whole, you know, Korean skincare lines and people sort of seeking them out and then seeing the Koreans as like the experts when it comes to beautiful skin?
Korea is really ahead when it comes to ingredient technology. We'll often see these new buzzy ingredients come out of Korea and they set the standard for the rest of the world. Glass skin specifically is so funny to me because I'm like, this is literal objectification. You're turning yourself into an object. Mm-hmm. I also think it has to do a lot with phone screens, and we're seeing ourselves through this sort of glass reflective screen more and more. And a big part of beauty today is sort of bringing your physical body closer to your online avatar, because there's so much we can do to perfect these images of us online. And then we see ourselves in the mirror and say, wait, why don't I look like that?
And I was wondering if, because people started using, you know, filters, and I just wondered if people wanted their actual self to start looking like the filters that people were sort of putting on when they post pictures.
Right. I've done so many interviews with cosmetic injectors and plastic surgeons over the past couple of years, and that's what's really stood out to me. People are no longer bringing in references of celebrities for what they want to look like. They're bringing in face-tuned or filtered images of themselves and saying, here's exactly what I want to look like. Can you, the doctor, turn me into my online avatar?
Wow, that's so interesting. And so I want to hear from you, our listeners at home, on the road, or elsewhere. Are you feeling a heightened sense of pressure when it comes to beauty and grooming, to change the way you look, to add steps to your beauty routine, to do more, to spend more, to look younger, better, or different? And how do you think all of this is impacting kids? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can keep comments coming in the chat. DTL5110 on YouTube says, I think exercising, Eating right and getting sleep works wonders versus all the potions out there minus plastic surgery. And so, you know, thank you for that comment. But we're seeing people sort of, you know, taking all these steps, and some of the routines are pretty extreme. People are mouth taping. I see people doing microcurrent shocks. They're buying these facial rolling pins. You got all kinds of face straps. Can you tell us how extreme you're seeing these routines get?
It's so extreme. It's an aesthetic that I often refer to as post-op without the op, especially those jaw shapers. Like, these are sort of interventions we see post-cosmetic surgery as you're healing. And the aesthetic of that is somehow very desirable right now. So people are drawn to these more and more extreme interventions, almost as in a performative way. Posting it online, that gets a lot of clicks. It gets a lot of outrage. It's sort of like rage bait skincare, entertainment skincare.
Yeah, I want to show a picture because we have this. People are getting these lights, the LED lights for their faces, the red light, blue light, yellow, orange lights. Talk about that. They're pretty expensive. They can be $100. I think some are less than $50, but you can spend several hundred dollars on these face masks. Why do you think that has sort of blown up, and do they actually work?
Red light is interesting because there is some data to show it works to help heal compromised skin. And I think what's interesting about the regular everyday person getting the red light mask is that it shows this sort of medicalization of your everyday skincare routine. But your skin on the daily, it's not a medical emergency to address, right? As the person wrote in, sleep, drink water, exercise, food, these things help build the skin. They don't make this, they don't help manipulate the skin into this ideal of beauty that we've been told is what healthy skin looks like. And to get that aesthetic, you need to go to more and more and more extreme measures.
Yeah, because, and people are just doing whatever they can. One of the things they have these folks sort of they put on multiple layers of mask. They have chin straps, and then in the morning they have to take all this stuff off.
Yeah,
and that has become the unmasking thing has become a big trend. Why do you think people are going to that extreme? And can you talk about these face masks? Because they're supposed to help your jawline and all of that. What do they do? And do they actually work as well?
They surely don't do anything good for your skin. I would say they're largely unnecessary. It's mostly something to do and post on social media or feel like you're being productive. The thing that you're describing is often referred to as the morning shed. So people will
morning
put
shed. There it is.
People will put layers of masks on their face before bed, tape up their lips, sometimes do like an overnight lip stain so that when you wake up, your lips look like they have lipstick on them, under eye masks, it's layers and layers. And then when you wake up, you peel everything off and you're ready for the day. Sometimes people refer to this as high maintenance to be low maintenance, which is ridiculous, obviously. It's just high maintenance. But the idea is that you're outsourcing your effort to your sleeping hours, which to me is pretty bleak. Like, we're commodifying every
moment of our day. How are you resting? How are you resting if you're doing that while you're trying to go to sleep? Your whole entire face is covered. Sin on Facebook says, they're definitely not feeling the pressure of the beauty industry, and it's because of my kids. And I don't want, she said, I don't want to accidentally give the example that beauty is important and not brains. I want them to know that being healthy and keeping up with yourself and self-care is important, but there's no need to be vain or shallow. And so there is a line that Sin on Facebook says that they have. And so that I want to bring up kids because there's this new skincare line for kids. And we've all seen tweens sort of in Sephora. Mm-hmm. How are kids being targeted for skincare these days?
It's funny, there was such an outrage over the Shea Mitchell skincare line for toddlers that came out recently. I've been tracking this trend since 2022 when it first started creeping up. And then in 2023, we got a skincare line for infants from Dior Beauty. Infants. There was a perfume included, as if an infant isn't the best smell in the world already. Beauty brands are really targeting tweens and teens right now, I think because of the social media environment. There's sort of been a collapse of dedicated spaces for children and dedicated spaces for adults online. We're all being fed the same sort of content. And I think it's just a normal human behavior for children to mimic the behaviors of the adults around them. It's sort of an aspirational thing. We do this all the time. We've done this for centuries. And I think the fact that young children are so interested in beauty is really a reflection of how obsessed adults are with beauty. Of course, they're going to mimic. And the beauty industry has seen a huge opportunity in this and is really capitalizing on it.
Especially when they're trying to form their identities and how they want to look and how Definitely. They want the world to perceive them. Let's bring in a caller. We have Tracy from New Jersey on the line. Tracy, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I just have a comment. I love this topic. I tried Botox. I'm about 58 years old, but I decided to go in the opposite extreme, and I want nothing to do with any of this kind of like beauty. Of course, I use cream on my face to stay hydrated, but I have two 20-year-old sons, and I really want them to see me age naturally, and my mother's aging naturally, and that's what I actually feel most confident about now.
Okay, Tracy, thank you so much. That's Tracy from New Jersey. There's people who are just rejecting all of this barrage of pressure to change themselves. By the way, if you're like Tracy, or maybe you are feeling some of the pressure when it comes to beauty and grooming, you can give us a call. The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. If you're feeling pressure about to change how you look, add steps to your beauty routine. If you're rejecting it all, let us know. And so Tracy mentioned Botox because that's like the next step. We talked about skincare, kids getting involved. They're mimicking adults. But then the next step, if you don't have this extreme routine and you're not just doing regular skincare, we're talking procedures.
Oh, yes.
And tell us there's levels to it.
There's definitely levels to it. I think with anti-aging, we see it start with skincare and then it levels up to Botox and filler to look more youthful with injections. And then it levels up to facelifts, which we're seeing grow at an alarming rate for especially younger and younger women. We're seeing it start around 35, 45, whereas in previous decades, the median age was around 55 or 60.
Wow. And so they're getting this. How much is this costing? Because I'm thinking 35-year-olds, do you really need to spend however much it is to do something with your face? And what's the logic behind that?
Right. It can cost anywhere from $8,000 to $200,000, depending on your surgeon and exactly what you're getting done facelift-wise. I think the motivation for it is just the extreme focus we have in our culture on looking youthful forever. There's also been some sort of scaremongering tactics from dermatologists and cosmetic surgeons lately talking about filler and complications from filler, which was very popular for the past four mm-hmm. or 5 years. Now we're hearing from surgeons that filler maybe doesn't dissolve as quickly as we thought it would. It migrates in the body, can stay in your body for up to 10 years, estimates say, and they're saying that can complicate future facelift results. So they're saying, why get filler when you could just get a facelift now instead of later?
And so you have people 35 who are mm-hmm. wanting facelifts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw Simone Biles she came online. She talked about how she had bags under her eyes and she's in her 20s.
Yes.
And she got the bags removed.
She did. Yeah, that's a lower blepharoplasty, which has been one of the top five cosmetic surgeries every year for the past couple of years, I think.
Wow. And so you got people in their mid-30s doing this, and you talked about some of the risks. We've done a show recently, and we talked about GLP-1s mm-hmm. earlier on the show and how everyone's kind of on it. How has widespread use of these GLP-1s sort of changed beauty expectations?
It's been great for the beauty industry. I get press releases every day from cosmetic surgeons' office talking about the new procedures they're offering to address the aesthetic consequences of losing a lot of weight rapidly the way people do on GLP-1s. So that is part of the growth of facelifts, of Botox, of fillers, of tummy tucks and liposuction, actually. There's a lot that the beauty industry is doing to kind of piggyback off the popularity of Ozempic. Even in terms of skincare, when you lose fat, when you lose your adipose tissue is what creates fibroblasts, which is what creates collagen. So you're actually losing some of your ability to create your own collagen, and the beauty industry can really weaponize that. And
because people were fighting against Ozempic face, which was kind of like the droopy face that you get when you lose weight rapidly. And so people getting fillers, try to reverse that. By the way, if you want to participate in the conversation, our question of the day: are you feeling a heightened sense of pressure when it comes to beauty and grooming? That is, to change the way you look, add steps to your beauty routine, do more, spend more to look younger, different, or better. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. We're also talking about the impact on kids. We have Sarah from Allentown on the line. Sarah, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, yes, good afternoon. So my comment about the unrealistic beauty standards, I just think that they're trying to push a narrative about the way that women and men are supposed to be looking. And it's just kind of strange that beauty industries are trying to push beauty standards on infants and children, because why would we want children to look a certain way, look older? It's like making them look vulnerable to other people. And also growing up and being on your phone, being, you know, seeing all these women in magazines look a certain way, there's no reason to add additional harm to, you know, their mentality when they're growing up already having to learn their bodies and things like that.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sarah from Allentown. Could have a huge impact on kids. I wonder, because I've heard that young people are using retinol. Are there products or things that kids, teens, should not be using?
Definitely. I mean, retinol is up there. Exfoliating acids and harsh exfoliating products are definitely up there. Anything with fragrance is going to be up there. We've been seeing reports that the more products these young kids use, as their skin is still developing, they're setting themselves up for potentially lifelong allergies, contact dermatitis, all sorts of inflammatory skin conditions. So it's really in the skin's best interest to not inundate it with lots and lots of products, particularly at young ages.
Yeah, and you're already dealing with hormone.
Exactly.
Yeah, I wanted to bring, oh, we had another caller. I was going to bring her in. She hung up. But if you, Anne, if you want to call back, we'll definitely bring you on. So Garten says, at this point, I'm trying to keep up with my 13-year-old's beauty routine. And Tiffany on Facebook says that, nope, she's not impacted at all, that she is aging gracefully. And Mark says, it's pretty simple. They want money. They want the money in your pocket. A fool and their money are soon parted. So they're like, people are sort of tricking you to give all your money to the beauty industry. I want to talk about men for a second, because, you know, there's whole industries now dedicated to men and grooming, and they are lapping it up. Can you talk about the trends there and what you're seeing?
Yes, the men's beauty industry is really growing quite rapidly. I do think that it has a lot to do with the political climate. If you look at the ideology of this administration right now, there's a huge focus on traditional gender roles. And what we've seen as beauty becomes more normalized for men is men are leaning into hyper-masculine aesthetics and women are leaning into hyper-feminine aesthetics. So they're kind of using beauty as like a tool to present themselves as the ultimate alpha men. And I think it's just, you know, it's capitalism, it's cosmetic contagion. There's no demographic that hasn't been untouched by beauty standards, particularly in the last 5 years.
And is it like special products for men, or do they just take what women are using and make it gray or blue on the packaging?
Probably in theory, yes. They're just taking the same ingredients and changing the packaging and giving it like a strong sounding name. There's not much of a difference when you're looking at what the skin needs in order to function in what a man would need or a woman would need.
Yeah. And by the way, The Rock has a skincare line. And Mike Tyson is also advertising a moisturizing soap called Squatch. So that you got men, very masculine men out here doing things for skincare. We have Steve, a man on the line from Reading. Steve, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is, while I think some of this is probably good from a health perspective, I think a lot of this this trend is, we're a culture of self-loathing. I think we're taught to not love ourselves. We're taught to not appreciate ourselves. We disrespect people as they age. Women are forced, feel like they're forced to do this because they won't be taken seriously as they get older. And the lack of respect for wisdom and aging is an American problem.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve, from Reading on the line. I mean, it does say a lot. I mean, Steve opened up and talked about so many different things because there is a lot of pressure. I think as you get older, you feel that ageism is right there and you're trying to, I guess, stop the clock, so to speak. So what are you seeing? Do people sort of talk about this? Is this sort of trying to reverse the clock and you know, age in reverse, or is it sort of this self-loathing that Steve was talking about?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. There's so many factors here. I always say beauty standards are the physical manifestations of systems of oppression, just like Steve was saying. So this focus on anti-aging is the physical manifestation of ageism. And as ageism gets worse and worse, of course, we want to anti-age more and more. A big thing that I hear from people is, I don't recognize myself anymore. I just want to feel like myself again. And it really positions the self as something that only exists authentically at a certain moment in time. And that time happens to be when you're 25. And it's a ridiculous concept, but I think it's one that's deeply felt. And when people are opting for Botox or opting for a facelift, it's often with this idea of, I just want to feel like myself again, because change is scary and aging is scary. And we're, instead of facing our mortality, we're going to the surgeon's office or the injector's office
and trying to prevent things from happening. Edie on Facebook says, I am 67 years old and as a seasoned woman have earned every wrinkle and laugh line. I use basic skincare products, all cruelty free. I use very little makeup. I do dye my hair purple because it's fun. But the products are vegan, says Edie. So Edie is very responsible. You brought up the issue of politics, Jessica, a little bit, and how the political climate has sort of caused people to change the way they look. And one of the things you've written about is Mar-a-Lago face. Mm-hmm. And could you talk about what that is and how politics is influencing which beauty products people use, mm-hmm. what procedures they get, and the way that they look?
Sure. Yeah. Mar-a-Lago face is a term that's used to describe the aesthetic of Trump and the people that surround him, particularly the women in his orbit. It's defined by blonde hair, blown out hair, a lot of filler, usually large, overfilled lips, mm-hmm. Heavy makeup, Botox, big eyebrows. It's a very high aesthetic labor look. You can see the effort that goes into it. And part of what this is a display of wealth and a display of power.
Because those lip injections cost money.
They cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I think also when you look at the administration's stance on trans health care, it's also sort of a taunt. It is saying cosmetic surgery for me, but not for thee. Hormone treatments for me, but not for thee. And it's really a sort of bleak reflection of policy choices of this administration.
Yeah. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have the MAHA sort of trend of people not, and that's Make America Healthy Again, sort of like this trend of using products that don't have chemicals in them. Can you talk about that? And are these chemical free? You know, are they taking off? What's happening in that industry?
Yeah, things called chemical free are certainly taking off. There's no such thing as a chemical free product. Water is a chemical. Everything is a chemical. So it's really this sort of fear mongering. But I think that fear is coming from a very real place. It's coming from a lack of healthcare. It's coming from facing problems in the medical system, which I think a lot of Americans can relate to. And it creates this feeling that I'm the only one that can help me because my government is not helping me. My doctor is not helping me. Feeling really helpless and saying, I'm going to control everything I can. And it turns into this sort of health optimization journey, very individualistic. I'm going to take all of these supplements. I'm going to take out these quote unquote scary chemicals from my routine. And I think we can see reasons for that, very real reasons for that fear. I mean, the FDA just announced that they are going to roll back a proposal that was going to mandate asbestos testing in cosmetics because a lot of cosmetics use talc. Asbestos sometimes contaminates talc. That was like a really big win for environmental health last year, and now it's being rolled back. So I think that's creating a lot of fear in the average everyday consumer.
And the way that you deal with fear is that you try to take control.
Yes, exactly.
You try to take control. Anne is on the line. Anne, you're on Studio 2. Thank you for calling back. What's your question or comment? And can you keep it brief?
Yes, I can. I think health care or beauty care is important, but beauty doesn't just mean makeup and plastic surgery. If you don't take care of your skin properly, especially as a child, you're not going to fare better as you get older.
Yeah.
You're going to have all the wrinkles. You're going to have all. But the pollution and the sun take such an impact on your skin. And your skin is an organ, and it needs to be taken care of. So not only are we hydrating properly and trying to eat properly to take care of that, you still need to have the right products on your skin to take care of it as well. And the younger you start, the better you will fare.
Thank you so much, Anne. Anne is right. And a lot of people have been, there has been talk about millennials sort of aging slower because, and skin and sunscreen has been
sunscreen has been
a big reason why.
I would agree with that. I think sunscreen is the one beauty product I can surely get behind. This is more of a health intervention. It's not regulated as a cosmetic. It's regulated as a drug because it has this extra health benefit. So protecting yourself from the sun is always a good idea.
And we only have a few more minutes, but I wanted to talk about this pale face phenomenon. I know this has been big in Korea. The paler you are, the more beautiful you're deemed to be. And a lot of women in America, white women specifically, are leaning into this. Talk about that trend.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of influences here. I think light skin has always been prized in
Korea. Colorism.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And so seeing it come to the West is another instance of Korean beauty really setting the standard and taking off here. I think it's very concerning when we look at the political climate of America right now that light skin is trending and pale skin is trending. This is not a coincidence. Beauty standards are political, and there's a reason why it's trending, and there's a reason why it's desirable right now. And I would say that's not a very good reason. It's a pretty concerning reason.
Yeah, and we're seeing that more and more. And I have to talk about the no makeup trend that happened. You saw Alicia Keys without makeup. Pam Anderson blew up because she went out, you know, on the red carpet, makeup free. Is this, but now Alicia Keys has a whole face, has a line, a beauty line now. So how is this trend going to stick around? There's a lot of people who wrote in who said they don't even wear makeup.
I love that. I don't know that this trend will stick around. I think we're on the cusp of a new trend cycle where, you know, pre-2016, it was all about heavy makeup. And then we got into this no makeup moment with Alicia Keys saying, I'm not going to wear makeup anymore. And skincare really taking off as the number one sector in the industry instead of makeup. And I feel like we might be cycling back to a heavy makeup standard. What I like to point out of all of this is the no makeup makeup thing is usually not a reduction of products. You're supplementing with products on the other end. So it's the invisible product of skincare that you're using instead of makeup. I would like to see more of a divestment from industrialized beauty overall.
Yeah, and as we get ready to wrap up, because you have a new anti-beauty gift guide that's coming out. So first of all, you got to explain to me what anti-beauty, what that means.
Well, I like to say that I am pro-people, anti-product. So when I'm writing about beauty, I don't promote any products. I think there is so much more to beauty to talk about than what product to buy. So I'm never going to suggest something that's just going to change the way you look. I think beauty books are an excellent gift. I always recommend the book Clean by James Hamblin. It talks about the actual science of the skin versus the science of skincare products. So that's the kind of thing you'll find in my anti-beauty.
And when does that
guide
come out?
It's going to come out this week.
Oh, congratulations. I look forward to seeing it. And so, Jessica Tofino, author of Ask Ugly, a beauty advice column for The Guardian, and writer behind the newsletter Flesh World. Thank you so much
being
on Studio 2. We really appreciate you.
Thank you, Cherry.
Yes, and I learned a lot. Thank you to everybody who called in, who wrote in, and told us all about what was going on in your beauty routine. Sam says, I blame this on J-Lo when she was modeling at 50 years old. People were so jealous. They were like, you know what? I want to look like that. And so they started spending all the money on the face care and skincare and all of that. So I want to say thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel Mae Bryan. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Charlie Kyer, and Paul Parmalee engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi Wolfman-Arendt will be back on Monday.